Hello and welcome to the Irish Fire Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Houghton. I'm an entrepreneur, investor, and financial independence enthusiast, sharing my financial freedom journey. Stay tuned and welcome aboard. I hope you are doing well. I think at one point or another, for any of us who work full time, we have a fantasy of being able to leave the job for a year or two and see what happens. Most of us likely aren't brave enough, short of being financially independent, to go forth and make such a brave decision. But thankfully, Cal, aka Mrs. Smart Money, was clever enough to go and try this in 2019, and I specifically remember following her story and the huge media storm that followed. In many ways, Cal is responsible for helping bring the FIRE movement in Ireland towards the mainstream, or at least allowing families to think more about their finances and think about how they can break away from the rat race. I've been following Cal's story for many years. I actually honestly never thought she would ever consider being a guest on the podcast. But thankfully, through a mutual friend, we were able to set this up. Now, Cal and I spoke for over 90 minutes, so there is so much content here. So we are going to break this down into two separate episodes. And guys, please accept my apologies if there is a delay between episodes at the moment. I will be providing an update in due course. And if you want to hear more in the meantime and you haven't already subscribed to the newsletter, do subscribe at firepodcast.ie to catch my monthly updates, where you will get to hear more regularly on personal updates on things that are going on with myself. But without further ado, let's jump over to the interview. Cal, it is so wonderful to have you on the show today.
It's great to be here, Michael. I've been looking forward to actually coming face-to-face, I mean, I'd say face-to-face, with you for quite some time, because I've known about you for years and years, and with the podcast and doing different interviews, I've been fascinated by your journey.
Let's go straight back to the end of 2018, start of 2019. And what I love about your story, Cal, is that you were kind of doing this at the same time that I was launching my own podcast and sharing my own story with the world. So the dates line up really nicely. Let's bring us back to, I guess, the start of your story and how the whole no spend year came about.
My story actually started a long time before that. And I'm guessing a good few of your listeners will empathize with the beginning, at the very least, of my story. Back in 2006, I was one of the hundreds of thousands of people who was like, get on the property ladder. And I remember all the TV shows that were out at the time. And it was like all these parents, these frazzled parents trying to get their 20-something-year-old fledgling kids out of the house. And it was like, there was several TV shows on RTE. There was TV shows in the UK, all based on basically get out of the house, get on the property ladder. And this whole idea of a starter home came out. And I was like, you know, if we don't get on the property ladder now, you know, we'll never get on it. But the other side of that time was, if you as much as walked into a bank and even had a thought about getting a mortgage, you had one. And I remember my very first mortgage, walking in, I had no clue actually how I even got that mortgage. Was I was in my mid-20s, I was single, and I basically woke up one morning, I just changed jobs, and I had left my apartment in Dublin. I was renting an apartment in Dublin, and I'd moved back home just with the way my job had changed, and I was going to rent again. That was my next natural step. But all this stuff was going on in the media, and I was like, oh, okay, everybody else is getting a house. I'm in my mid-20s, I'm 2 weeks on probation into this new job that I'd never done before. Why not ask? So I went into the bank one morning. I literally woke up one morning in the shower. I'm going to buy a house. That afternoon, that lunchtime, I went into the bank. And half an hour later, I came out with mortgage approval for 7.5 times my income from a job that I had only just started. I hadn't even gotten out in front of anybody yet. I was still in the training mode. And they said, yes. So suddenly, and I thought I was the bee's knees in the cat's pajamas. I thought, cool, I have this house. I'm like everybody else now. I'm going out to the world. Well, look, a year later, the whole bottom fell out of everything. So quickly, I thought I was the bee's knees getting this house and starting out my life. And on paper, and at that stage, my now husband, he had been working in New Zealand. He had come back to Ireland. He had moved in. So he was only back a couple of months in Ireland when suddenly we had this house in a ghost estate We couldn't live in it. Our first kid had arrived at that stage. The company he'd worked for did a whole Enron job on itself, and that folded. So 15 years gone overnight. And suddenly I was left being the only income in the house with baby, mortgage. You know, I wasn't trying to deal with not working for the first time ever in his life. It went from, on paper, amazing starting out to really suddenly very, very vulnerable. And because we couldn't live in the house for loads of different reasons, we ended up renting. But we still had to pay that mortgage, and it was on my one income. And it really surprised me, Michael, how quickly things can turn, because I wasn't overspending. I wasn't credit card debt. It was doing what everybody else was doing. And I didn't really think, because that, well, if everybody else is doing it, and of course the bank trusted me to give me all this money, so that must be okay. I didn't read the fine print, and I didn't really understand what I was taking on. So the next nearly 10 years were really, really tough, because we still had to pay all that back. And I had tried to rent the place out. That didn't go according to plan. The renters didn't pay and the house fell apart. So I didn't have the money to put back into this house because we were renting and we're stretched so thinly. We ended up selling that house for half what we bought it for, not including any of the mortgage payments or any of the stuff we put into it. It was this massive six-figure hole in our finances. And it was all we could do was just carry that debt with us, stay renting, try and pay that off and get ourselves back up to zero. That whole time, that was when I really started to grow up when it came to money, because I said, okay, I cannot have my family go through this again. That's not a way to live. So fast forward to nearly 10 odd years. We did. We cut our claw to suit our measure. It was really hard. It was a horrible place to be. But we had two kids at that stage, and we're up to zero and we're doing well. But to get up to zero, I had totally thrown myself into work. Now, thankfully, I enjoyed what I did. My background is science. I worked in pharma. I loved what I did. But as the job evolved, as everything evolved, I was working more and more. And a point came where a whole week passed where I hadn't seen the kids awake. And when I say that, I'm talking Monday to Sunday, because I was gone so early in the morning. And by the time I came back in the evening, you know, they were gone to bed. And I was like, this is not what I signed up for. Again, another second point in my life where it's not what I signed up for. So the very short version is that I ended up walking away from my 16-year career. There was no redundancy. There was no anything. I worked out my notice. I worked a four-month notice period because my boss, she was so lovely. And I didn't want to just leave her. But I needed to change things because I wasn't seeing my kids. And actually, the absolute crux was I was studying a master's, because why wouldn't you take on extra workload when you're already drained and tired? But I was studying for a master's and I said, right, okay, I had a study day. So I went and I said, I'd take my son from school. And he was only five at the time. So he was in senior infants. And his older sister was in second class. So it wasn't like they were new to the school or anything. But I went up and I'd never really seen the school. Like, I hardly ever been there. And I was in the yard and there was all the different moms there and his grandparents there, and they're all collecting their little ones. And they finished up earlier than the older kids. So I was just standing there and couldn't see my kid at all. And the yard cleared out and they were all chatting with each other. I didn't know anybody. And then there was this teacher at the other side of the yard looking at me. And I just went up to her and I said, look, I'm here to collect my son. And she was very nice. She was a genuinely lovely person, but she just said, look, I don't know who you are. I can't let you collect anybody. And I went, whoa. I couldn't collect my own child from school because I was never around. That woke me up. That was when I handed in my notice, because I thought, okay, money, yes, money has always been there. It has never necessarily treated us the best, but I could always earn money. Even if I didn't know how I was going to earn money, I could always earn money, but I could never turn back time.
Yeah, look, the old time versus money trade-off. It's an interesting one, and it's certainly something that's plagued me. Probably more so in recent times as one moves closer to financial independence and realizing the delayed gratification aspects of everything that we do on a day-to-day basis. And I think for all of us, there's a certain sticking point where we get to within work and our jobs and whatever it is we're doing, where we say, gosh, I'm not willing to do that. Or if that happens, that's it. I'm out of here. And it sounds to me like you found that point. And you know what? So many people would have just accepted it and continued down that road. And being able to identify that and having the courage to walk away was hard. Even in our family's own situation, where we're a long way now towards financial independence, it's still very difficult to leave it behind. I'm extremely impressed that you were able to recognize where you were at and make that decision to jump. So look, fill us in. What happened next? How did things go from there? I'm really fascinated to hear how things develop.
So without knowing exactly what I was going to do, without even knowing what the future held, I knew I had to do this. So handed in my notice, walked away. And I remember sitting in the back garden. It was a sunny evening at the end of summer in 2018, crying because, what have I done? I was the breadwinner. We had two cars, we had a mortgage, we had childcare, all that kind of stuff. And I was like, what have I just done? I've just thrown a grenade in on top of our family here. But at the same time, I had to do it. Didn't know anything else, but I knew I had to do that. The next step was, if I was going to cut that income in half, I was going to make that income work as hard as it possibly could. And that was the inception of the no-spend year. So it was a long time coming. I had no idea what even a no-spend year would bring, because I had read books on it. Like, it wasn't totally from nothing. But the books I'd read was one girl, Michelle McGaugh's book, The No-Spend Year. But she had her partner, yes, but she had no kids. And the other girl, Kate Flanders, who wrote A Year of Less, it was just her. I hadn't known anybody who did it with family. I hadn't known anybody who did it with a mortgage, nothing like that. But I said, we'd give this its best shot. I needed this 1 year. And I told myself I'd always go back to work if I had to, but I wanted to see what this would look like, because I would regret it if I didn't. So I embarked on the no-spend year. And like the scientist in me couldn't help but get involved here. And I love a good study, and I knew for this to work, I had to track it. I knew I had to have something to compare to. Now, thankfully, one good thing coming from all the years of paying down that debt was I got really good at budgeting. I got really good at tracking where our money was, where we were, all that goal setting stuff. I had that. So I had years of budgets built up. So I said, okay, we'll go with the closest to it, because inflation and stuff over time has an impact. So I looked at 2018. I said, okay, here's what we did in 2018. How can I replicate this year as best possible, but do it as efficiently as possible? So I built out a manifesto. I had the manifesto, had everything in it, because I needed to include like the kids' activities. Like, it was a whole year of their childhood. So I couldn't just cut everything out. I had to be practical as well, because I was a mom, I was a parent, and we had to keep things running. So we had to keep their big into swimming and things. So I had to keep that. We did the same holiday both years in a row, same accommodation, same time of year, same everything. We went, it was another couple with their kids, we would go, so the whole lot of us would book self-catering, same everything as much as possible for the whole year. The big differences were primarily for me, because I had chosen this and I wanted this year more than anything to work. So I decided I wouldn't buy clothes for the year, I wouldn't dye my hair for the year, I wouldn't go to the beauty salon. This is going to kill me. I don't know if you find going to the beauty salon, Michael, a kicker, but for me, look, there's a streak in me. I do like getting my nails done. I do like that kind of stuff. But I said, no, I wanted this time more. So I had all of that. And I also said, I'm going to really optimize the food budget. Now, food is really important, because you have to eat well. You have to nourish your body. There's no point in cutting back for the sake of cutting back. You have to be smart with that. Any of our bills and stuff, anytime they came for renewal, I would negotiate them, all that kind of thing. So I had my manifesto, my rules of what I was going to do. No takeaways as well. That was in there. And so we started. And the beginning of the year, it was like, okay, oh, I also gave up alcohol. And you know, the interesting thing, and the whole lot of it, and it just, I don't know if it's a reflection of the Irish psyche or what, but people found it very strange that I would walk away from a 16-year career. And I get it. Like, it does on the outside seem very strange, but my driving force was, I can't turn back time. So that was very strange. And I would get kind of questions. And I would get questions like, you know, is everything okay? Did you have a nervous breakdown? What's wrong? Is your marriage intact? And, like, well-meaning, but it was like, when did I give you that impression? I'm telling you my reasons. I just wanted to have this year out with the kids. It's not that I have failed as a human being. I just wanted something more. I wanted my life to count more for me. But the other one, the one that raised even more eyebrows, was the alcohol. Not drinking for a year. And I could see it in people's eyes. It was like, did I have an issue with drinking? Did I, you know, had I hit this crisis mode where I had to just go to rehab? Or just, it was so strange. And the general thing was, I kind of tried to explain, so this is my choice for the year, because, you know, drinking is expensive. And, you know, I can always drive home now from things, as opposed to staying in a hotel or whatever. And it was purely to make the year work. But the general kind of kickback from it was that I was nearly crazy giving it up for the year. And it was, oh, I couldn't do that. Or oh, that's, oh, you're so brave. There's nothing brave about deciding not to buy. It's just a thing. But a friend of mine, and it was in January, we actually, we went out to meet them. It was in a pub and I just had water or something. And she did something really nice. She, when I told her, I said, yeah, look, I've given up for the year. She just leaned over and she just said, do you know what, Kel? That's going to change your relationship with alcohol in ways you don't even realize. And I was like, what does that even mean? And she, and I just went, well, thanks, because it was the first person who didn't look aghast for a start and wonder what was gone wrong with me. But she was right. She was absolutely right. It did. I didn't even realize I had a relationship with it. And I wasn't even a big drinker. But we tend to celebrate with a glass of Prosecco or something. We commiserate with a whiskey. We socialize with a beer. We have a barbecue with a glass of wine. It's associated with all the ups and downs. And that was something I had to kind of get used to, that I didn't just kind of reach for it as a social occasion or whatever, because my choice not to. But it was very strange because I had associated ups, downs, middles in my life with having a glass of X. And it did change. It made me step back and go, huh, actually, do you know what? It is a bit more ingrained in our lives than what I'd actually thought. But I'm digressing slightly. But it was a really interesting one to see people's reactions to even doing it. But look, people adjust very quickly. We don't necessarily like change as a human race, but we adjust very quickly. And even though not everybody got what I was doing, and there was a few kind of moms and things going, your poor children, how are they going to survive? They were fine. They're still alive. They're doing well. As the year went on, I suppose the toughest time for me was when the novelty wore off the year, and I was in about February, and February is not my favorite month anyway. I just think it's like this perfect 4 weeks that was stuck there, that they kind of said, looking to wedge this in. And they kind of, so sorry for anybody who has their birthday in February. I just think it's one of those, if February was a vegetable, it would be celery. That's the way I look at February. So it's just, and it's that tough month when the novelty of January and all the enthusiasm wears off and you're kind of just trudging through. And we do the bank holiday, so that is helping. But in general, it's that tough month. But that hit me because I also, besides the not drinking and that, I hadn't found my groove yet with socializing. I was still getting used to trying to cook a lot more at home and stuff. But it was the makeup and the beauty products, because I decided I was going to cut back on those as much as possible. And that kind of got me. Actually, I'll tell you a story of what really got me. It's my darling kids. And it was February and I wasn't feeling hectic because my hair dye was growing out, and I realized for the first time in years, A, what my hair color was actually like, my natural hair color, and B, it was going gray. And I hadn't even realized how gray I was going. But I walked into the kitchen and my kids, they just suddenly went silent and they looked at me. And I was like, what are you up to? This is an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old now. And they were like, well, we were just discussing what age you were, Mom. And I was like, not feeling good already. And then your kids look at you. They were discussing what age I was. And I said, what age do you think I am? And I was already just sinking down, my shoulders were slumping. They just said, my son pipes up and he goes, well, Mom, your hair is gray. Nanny, my mother, her hair is red. So you have to be older than Nanny. So I think you're a million. Then my daughter pipes up, much more practical creature is my daughter. And she goes, Aaron, that is so silly. Mom, people don't live to be a million. So that's not possible. So she couldn't possibly be a million. I think she's 100. And I just remember turning around and just walking right back out of the room. It was just, it was that low point. And you're just, yeah, I wasn't able for it. So I remember going out to her room, just sitting on my bed. God, what am I doing with my life? Again, another thing I hadn't expected or signed up for. I thought this would be a little more easy breezy. Then I kind of pulled myself by the bootstraps and I just went, hold on here now. I'm an adult. I'm whinging about my makeup or my face, and I'm perfectly healthy. I'm a perfectly healthy person. What can I do about this? So actually, I set myself a little project to start researching blogs and researching everything on homemade things, face masks. And the other thing is, I realized I actually had loads of stuff there, but I was afraid to use it in case I'd run out. But the reality is, we've so many things hidden away in presses and drawers and stuff. I barely ran out all year. Coming towards the end, yeah, fine. It was, I leaned a bit more on the homemade stuff. But as the year went on, my skin was really clear. It was probably the best condition it ever had because I was eating better in general. I was drinking more water. And my skin just got better and better and better. It was in my head. I was not using the stuff I already had. And I wasn't thinking a bit laterally and going, well, what could I use? What could I eat? What could I, if I drank more water? And it had a massively positive impact on my skin and my hair and my nails and everything. So I just had to get out of my victim mode and just pull up my bootstraps and get practical about things.
Ah, geez, aren't kids great? I always love those sort of stories. And you know, it's really interesting. I find this whole thing interesting. And it sounds like, and for me, it's very, very relatable because I think of anything like this, any sort of extreme, and I say extreme because it's extreme conventionally, in the same way the fire movement is to mainstream normal life, if you like, or normal society, where it's often a case that somebody in the family hears about this fire movement or hears about this no spend year or whatever it's going to be, and they make a decision to do it. And it sounds like that's what happened with yourself, Carl, and you went, yeah, look, this is what we need to do. And it's really funny how family dynamic can be with money, and there seems to be a thing where there's one dominant person, and it's not gender based, it can depend and differ, but there's typically one person within a relationship that tends to be more dominant when it comes to being in control of the finances. And at a recent Limerick FI group, we were sitting in Self's Pub there in Limerick City. It's a fabulous pub. For anybody that ever does venture to Limerick City, I'd highly recommend checking it out. And we were sitting in there, and somebody asked a question: how do your partners feel about you pursuing a fire journey? And I was quite tight-lipped on the topic and was keen just to see how everybody else replied. And I was genuinely shocked because their answers were the same as mine. And it was four or five very big names in the Limerick FI meetup group that were at this particular meetup who all said the same thing. And they said their partners don't even really have an interest. And it's amazing to think that somebody could go and make a life-changing decision that is pursuing financial independence, something that will make them and their families potentially wealthy for generations to come, without bringing everybody on board. And I guess for me anyway, and my wife is certainly of the same nature, where she wouldn't really have much interest on a day-to-day basis, or wouldn't even fully understand just the impact that the compounding has had, both from an investment point of view, but also a income point of view and reducing our expenses point of view. However, they, the kids and my wife, have all had to come with me on this journey one way or another, because there is certainly sacrifices that have had to be made. And it sounds to me, Carl, that your situation might be the same, that you had this idea that you kind of knew where the finances were, you had a good inkling that, yeah, look, we can go here and we can save. And I know that you ended up saving 27,000 euros in a year, which was a phenomenal amount of money. But how did you go with bringing the family onto this path and bringing them down and selling them on the idea of you leaving your job and moving down to a one-income family to pursue this no-spend year? And just how did that play out?
Yes. So bringing the family along on this journey. Now, to be fair, my husband is brilliant. He just said, look, I want you to be happy. Kids were a different ballgame. They didn't have the same sympathy whatsoever for cutting back on things. They were a tough, tough audience. We made loads of different fundamental changes, but one of the things was we had two cars, but we went down to one, and it was a 2008 1.2 estate. I had an Opel Astra estate. And I thought, this is going to be fine. It's going to do us just grand for the next while, because we'd just gotten a bit of work done on it. It had passed the NCT. It was going fine. But then within a couple of weeks of me finishing up, before it even started the no spend year, I was picking up the kids from school and the gearbox went. Absolutely just went in the middle of the drive home. Now, thankfully, I'm not a nervous driver. I like driving. But I remember I had first gear and fifth gear left. That was it. And I tried to bring the car home going through the two of those. It's an interesting experience. It's an experience I haven't had since the 1980s. It's the first car I had, which didn't have first gear. It had the rest. But I got the car home. We got it into the yard. I went, okay, this is not going to do us for the rest of the year. And we priced it up and it was going to be more expensive to get the gearbox fixed than the actual cost of the car. So we'd had savings there. We had built up an emergency fund for contingencies for this change that we were going to make. And then we realized, okay, if we get one good car, and I didn't want to get a combustion engine. We had just gotten solar panels, loved solar panels. We had a battery. I said, okay, let's just look at electric cars. And we ended up going and getting an electric car. And we did take out a loan for that. And that's the last loan we've ever taken. And I will not get a loan again. And so we moved over to electric, which worked out really well. So with the electric car, yes, we had a loan for it, but tax, insurance, tolls, running costs, everything, it was the first time I've ever seen a car be cost neutral. So yes, you do pay for the car, but it ended up being really cost neutral, which was brilliant. So that was a really positive change. It was a risk because I didn't know anybody who had an electric car at that stage, but it paid off really well. Particularly in the summer, you could charge a little bit with the solar panels. So one thing nicely played into the other. So I do not mind spending big on things when it's thought out and there's a bigger picture in play. That 1 year made us realize that one car was actually enough for us. Now, my husband has a motorbike, which he can use in a pinch, but with a bit of organization and conversation, we can get by with one car. So we always have one good car. Going back to the no spender with the kids, they did find it a little bit tough in the beginning because I cut out a lot of the convenience stuff that I would have had in their lunch boxes and stuff. So fully realize are full of sugar, yogurts and things like that. They're all cut out. So we went back to more basics, but I made sure to kind of bring them in on the conversation. So I said, look, we're not going to get these processed things. What would be your favorite fruit? So they would have like a little bit more strawberries or things like that mixed in, which were more expensive, but at least it was meted. Like they're still small kids at that stage. So like, they'd each get the biggest strawberry at the pot, and that felt brilliant because they were winning and the parents were losing, this kind of thing. So making a game out of it worked really well. And even though I was cooking a lot more from scratch during the no spend year, I'd ask them, well, what do you want? You know, well, let's say it's an evening and they hadn't had a treat in a while and they wanted burgers and chips. I would make that from scratch, from homemade. But a big concession that I did make, because I do, like I've said it before, but eating healthily is really important. But to do that, I believe in balance. So since we weren't getting takeaways and things anymore, I would do what's probably not the PC name for it, but a junk food Friday. So when I was doing the weekly shop, I would pick up a frozen pizza, I might pick up frozen chips or something like that, or onion rings or whatever it is that they wanted. So they knew every Friday we'd have a junk food Friday. So I'd have an evening off cooking and they knew to expect it. So that made it easier not to get takeaways. It made it easier that not every day was going to be mom's healthy food day. You know, they were more likely to eat the brown bread. They were more likely to eat the fruit because they knew it was ketchup central on a Friday evening. And that just made it all okay for them. So when I was making the decision to do the no spend year, we did sit the kids down. It was going to be a big change for them. And I said, look, we have options here now. I can stay working or I can be around more. And both of them hands down said, we want you around more. So that was the kind of whole premise of getting them on board, that I would be around more, but it would have to change. And kids are really, people say resilient. I just think they have way more sense on their shoulders than a lot of adults. And they knew what their priority was. So when I said, look, we won't have the same amount of money, but we'll do these things instead. So we would go on a lot more hikes, a lot more picnics. We'd go on play dates. We'd visit people a lot more. I'd spent more time with people that year and made more friends that year and tried more new things that year than I probably ever had for the decade before that. Because I had that space to do that. And I had space to bring the kids to different activities and look up what events were free on Facebook or whatever and actually go and spend time with them and be prepared. So for the most part, yes, there were a few things they had to give up, like some processed foods and the odd takeaway. But in general, there was a lot more time spent as opposed to money spent. And that did balance things out quite well.
Yeah, you know, isn't it funny when you reflect on what you just said there, that basically your kids got a full-time stay-at-home parent and they got less takeaways and junk food. And, you know, it just seems like a little bit of a no-brainer when you sit down and reflect on that. And certainly back when my youngest child was 2, I did something very similar. I worked part-time for over a year and definitely has paid dividends. I liked what you alluded to earlier in relation to the electric car. There's a big difference between what I would refer to as capital expenditure versus day-to-day expenditure. And having the foresight to spend money to save you money, I think, is a really critical aspect of the FIRE movement. We also upgraded our car a couple of years back, working through the same logic. We also installed solar panels, again, working through the same logic. We have a loan for both of those items, but we're happy to have a loan, knowing that it's going to save significant money in the long run. And interestingly, from a FIRE point of view, when you do invest in capital items that are going to save you money month to month, It effectively reduces your FIRE number. Eventually, those capital items will be paid back, so you don't need to calculate that cost in your FIRE number, and instead you can focus on the new lower expenses. And it's certainly been one of the tricks for us. The takeaways and your no spend year, I wasn't surprised to hear that you reduced your takeaways to virtually none. For me, takeaways can be a significant cost, and if you do have children, food is likely your biggest expense. It certainly is for us. And it's an easy win. Cutting back the takeaways, cutting back the convenience food shopping, and focusing on the spending when it comes to food purchases is a really easy win. And every family out there can be doing their part to reduce not only the spend, but also the waste when it comes to food, which is really, really important. Carl, this has been great so far. Let's take a break for a couple of minutes and we will end part one of the interview here. Guys, it will likely take me a couple of weeks to get part two edited, so please bear with me while I work through this. But Carl, I'm certainly looking forward to asking you more questions about what you've done since that no spend year and where life has taken you. For you, dear listener, if you have any questions on this episode, drop me an email at michael@firepodcast.ie, and I look forward to coming back with part two on the next episode.